Welcome to The Green Urbanist, a podcast for urbanists fighting climate change. I'm Ross. Thank you again for joining. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're asking the question, are tall buildings sustainable? Something that I think we can all agree on is that a sustainable city needs a certain amount of density. The antithesis of the sustainable city is suburban sprawl, where you need a car to drive everywhere. You take up, you know, tons of land. It's very inefficient, and so we have to move in the other direction. We have to build more densely, and a lot of people would put forward this idea that to make our cities more dense, we have to use tall buildings. They say we have to build up instead of out. And tall buildings are seen in many ways as a kind of silver bullet, a solution to getting that, you know, critical mass that we need to have sustainable transport, to have vibrant communities where you can support local businesses, where everywhere is walkable, you know, and they point to places like New York, maybe Vancouver, as places that, you know, are examples of this. And, you know, living in London was historically quite a low-rise city, but in the last 20 years has gotten very tall. According to the New London Architecture Annual Tall Building Survey of London, in 2020 there was 525 tall building projects in the pipeline, with 89 under construction across the city. So that is equivalent to about 100,000 homes. So it's a really, really significant type of development that is coming forward. And I see it also in, you know, other cities around the UK, Manchester, you know, Belfast, and even smaller, you know, the sort of smaller regional cities which haven't historically had that sort of scale of development are now seeing pressure for taller buildings. So means we have to look at this really holistically, and we have to decide, is this the right way to go? Should we be embracing the typology of tall buildings in our cities? Should that be part of our future vision for cities, making them more sustainable? Or are they doing more harm than good? And while I'm looking at this, I'm going to cover the three aspects of sustainability, the three pillars, which are environmental, social, and economic. As I always say, it's not just about carbon emissions. We also have to make sure that cities are, you know, have an economic vitality, and also that they have livability, that they're good places to live. I'll get into it basically straight away because I think it's going to be a fairly lengthy episode. I've got quite a big script here written out. Worth noting that, you know, in this episode, particularly when I'm talking about the economic aspects, I'm very much leaning on my experience of the UK context, and in other parts of the world, different planning systems and market conditions may well make some of my points less valid. But I think on the whole, in this episode, there's a lot of general principles that can be applied anywhere. So, I mean, the first question when you're delving into this topic is, what is a tall building? You know, let's just go back to basics. There's loads of definitions that different people use, different cities use. And one of the challenges about talking about tall buildings as an idea is that it's actually a very broad typology. So we could be talking about, you know, a 10-story modernist housing estate or a 50-story high-end office building. You know, these two things are very different. So we need to be careful about the language that we use so we can bring a bit of nuance to this topic. At Urban Initiative Studio in London, where I work as an urban design consultant, one of our areas of expertise is tall buildings. We do a lot of work consulting with cities and developers about the strategic role of tall buildings in cities. Over the years, we've developed a way of categorizing tall buildings, which basically can be adapted anywhere, and it's based on their height relative to the height of buildings in the surrounding context. So for instance, if you're in an area where all the buildings are two-story homes, then a six-story building might appear to you as a tall building because it's three times the context. Whereas the same building in a city center where all the buildings are four or five stories, you know, a six-story building won't stand out at all. So you wouldn't call it a tall building. Now, let's say as a general rule, typically once you get a building that is about double the context height, we would start calling it a tall building. But it's not a hard and fast rule. It's just a starting point, so you can actually start to analyze tall buildings in different contexts. So that's a good way of thinking about it. Now, that's a good way of defining tall buildings from an urban design point of view. It takes into account the characteristics of a place. However, in this episode, we also want to talk about things like energy efficiency and the carbon footprint of tall buildings. And from a construction point of view, a six-story building is not really tall. It's just a conventional building with conventional kind of engineering and construction techniques. Once you get to about 10 stories, then buildings really start to take a different form. They require different construction techniques. So you might consider this to be tall, but again, there's no really agreed definition. And of course, the higher you go, you know, the more different it becomes. So a skyscraper, for instance, typically defined as being above 40 stories. And then you keep going up, you get to categories like super tall and hyper tall. It's pretty confusing. But I'll just make sure to flag up what sort of scale tall building I'm talking about as we go through the various topics in this episode. Before we get into the detail, it's worth taking a step back and considering what the role of tall buildings are in cities. And that will really help us frame the discussion. So this is a huge topic and it's much debated, but I'll just try and give you a succinct summary of my thoughts on this. First of all is the idea of tall buildings expressing power and importance. So think back through history, think of really historic cities that you might know. In Europe, the tallest buildings from previous generations were cathedrals, maybe mosques. Certainly in the Middle East would be mosques. It might be town halls, city halls. It might be the palace of some royalty. These are all buildings that express power, express that this is a significant place, something significant happens here. This is the center of faith, or it's the seat of government, something like that. And part of the reason for that is because, before modern construction techniques, it just took a hell of a long time to build tall buildings. So you weren't going to do it unless you had a lot of money and a lot of power behind it. Some cathedrals in Europe took hundreds of years to be finished. The Duomo in Florence in Tuscany, they started building it and they didn't even know how they would finish it, because nobody could figure out how to make a cupola, the round bit on top. No one could figure out how to make it. Like physically, they couldn't figure out the physics of how to make it stand up. It was so big until like 100 years later, Brunelleschi came along and figured it out. If we go back even further in time, think of Egypt and the ancient Mayan cities. These have huge structures, huge pyramids, and these were not ordinary buildings. They were very significant buildings. They were tombs. They were places of sacrifice. Very important places in those societies. These tall buildings also tended to be located in central locations. So they serve another purpose, which is navigation, wayfinding, legibility. Just think about how humans found our way around before Google Maps, even before paper maps. We relied on objects we could see and recognize to place ourselves in context. So, for instance, a mountain or a river or even the stars, people would navigate by the North Star. And we do the same thing in cities. We look around for things we recognize to help us navigate and to place ourselves in the context. Tall buildings that are centrally located and immediately recognizable are the perfect wayfinding tools in urban environments because you can see them from all around and you always know where you are in relation to them. Now, it's worth noting as well that throughout history, most tall buildings were not about increasing density. They actually often weren't very practical at all. A cathedral doesn't provide more habitable rooms or business space. All this changed with the advent of the skyscraper in the late 19th century. At this time, architects in North America started figuring out how to construct buildings above 10 stories using steel frames. And this meant they could be constructed relatively quickly and cheaply and have usable floor space on every story. Now, tall buildings have become so prevalent in some cities that they no longer fulfill the role of marking significant places or functions, or assisting with wayfinding and city legibility. They could be located in any random place, and far from being centres of religious worship or societal importance, they're often anonymous office or residential buildings, hardly something to celebrate by taking up prominent skyline space. However, our brain still expects them to fulfil these roles, and of course they still can if they're carefully located and designed. Okay, so there's my canned history of tall buildings, just to give you a bit of context. But now let's move on to the question at hand. Are they sustainable? Let's start with carbon emissions. How do we calculate the carbon footprint of a building? Well, we need to look at both embodied carbon, which is the emissions related to all the materials that go into a building and the construction of the building. And we need to look at operational emissions, the energy use associated with heating, lighting, air conditioning, and everything else that goes on in a building day to day. So in a Guardian article from 2020, Tim Snelson, an engineer from Arup, the big engineering consultancy, reports that they have calculated that a skyscraper will typically have double the carbon footprint over its lifetime compared to a 10-story building of the same floor area. So remember I said skyscraper is about 40 stories or above, so we're talking about a pretty tall building here. And they're comparing it to, they say, a 10-story building, which is still a fairly conventional building in terms of its construction. Once you get up to skyscraper level, though, the structure changes dramatically. Tall buildings are inherently unstable, having a small footprint compared to their height, and have to fight much more against wind and, well, gravity. This translates into a lot more material, steel, and concrete in the foundations and structure, and more complex construction methods compared to conventional buildings. And that adds up to significantly more carbon emissions before the building even opens for business. A study from University College London found that the operational energy demand of tall buildings is also much higher than mid-rise buildings. This is particularly true of office buildings. In the study, they compared hundreds of buildings across London and found a clear trend where, on average, an office building of 20 stories will have 2.5 times the electricity consumption per square meter compared to a 6-story building. It suggested that tall buildings likely require more heating and cooling because they are naturally exposed to more extreme temperature, cooler air, higher winds, but also more direct sunlight, which can cause overheating. They also need vertical transportation like elevators, which is very energy intensive. When they compared residential buildings, conventional versus tall, they found a less stark difference, but there was still a clear relationship between more height and greater energy consumption. Consider that buildings and the construction industry are estimated to account for 39% of global emissions. So this is one of the really big issues that we need to be always reducing energy use and the embodied energy. We need to be taking measures across the board to reduce emissions. And so from this perspective, it makes sense to avoid tall buildings whenever we can. I mean, if we can, if we have enough space and we can develop, say, a 6-story building, you know, that provides the same square meters compared to a 20-story building, in terms of carbon emissions, it makes total sense to go for the lower rise building. I also want to just continue this environmental theme for a moment to bring up the issue of ecology, and specifically the problem of bird deaths in cities. So you may not realize, but actually birds dying from colliding with glass, basically flying directly into glass, is responsible for billions of bird deaths every year. In fact, it's the second largest human-made hazard to birds after habitat loss. Tall buildings are the main culprits because they extend further into bird flight paths and tend to use a lot of glass in their appearance. Also at night, lights on tall buildings can confuse birds and throw them off their migration because they use stars and the moon to navigate. The final environmental consideration I want to bring up is the idea of adaptability and what happens to tall buildings if they become obsolete. Look at any well-preserved historic building in a major city, and you'll find that it has probably gone through multiple uses and different internal arrangements over the years. Think of Victorian terraces and European courtyard-style buildings. If they're too large for a single home, you can divide them into flats. If they're too small, you can knock through some walls and combine two buildings together. If you need an office space, then they can easily be adapted to that from a residential use. These typologies are infinitely adaptable, which is one of the reasons they've survived hundreds of years and are still relevant in cities today. Tall buildings, however, are a very unique and specific kind of building form that often cannot be easily adapted to other uses if necessary. For example, modern office buildings tend to have high ceilings and very deep footprints. This makes them difficult to adapt to residential use, for instance. Now, why is this important? Well, cities are changing all the time, and especially in the post-COVID-19 world, we may see cities being used quite differently. This means that at some point we could see certain tall buildings lying empty, as their original use is no longer necessary or profitable. If our only option is then to demolish them and build something different, then we're wasting huge amounts of energy, materials, and emissions. So from a sustainability perspective, we want to be reusing and adapting existing buildings as much as possible, especially if the buildings are only a few years or decades old. Okay, so you might say, what about density? You know, cities need to be dense to be sustainable. Density from tall buildings allows us to build upwards rather than outwards, avoid suburban sprawl, and support sustainable transport modes. So really the question here is, can you have enough density without tall buildings, or are they necessary for this sustainable vision of cities? And could the benefits from extra density outweigh the extra carbon footprint? Now, this is a difficult question to answer in an abstract sense. It really depends on context. Of course, if you have a situation where there are only a small number of constrained development sites available and you absolutely have to increase density for some reason, then yes, tall buildings might be the only typological solution to that. However, in the real world, usually this isn't the case. Generally speaking, mid-rise development at a human scale, no higher than, say, six stories, can easily deliver over 100 homes per hectare on substantial sites, which you could consider high density compared to a typical suburban area. In fact, here in the UK, areas of traditional terraced housing are often above 100 homes per hectare, even with only being two or three stories in height. Researchers have also identified that on many sites, courtyard-style blocks, which you find all over Europe, can often achieve the same density or greater compared to tall tower-style buildings. So density is much more about efficiency of space rather than height, and can take many forms. Tall buildings, by their nature, are actually quite inefficient with space. They require large reception spaces, elevators, internal servicing areas, and that means that the amount of space you can actually use for living or working in gets smaller in comparison to the structure as a whole. What is also important is this idea of achieving density over a wide area, because that's what plays a role in supporting local centres, a range of businesses, sustainable transport options, and encouraging low-carbon lifestyles. In contrast, a single lonely tall building in a sea of low-density sprawl is just injecting a super-density into a small area. But if you calculate the density for the entire neighbourhood, it would still be pretty low. Often this one tall building will not be enough to support good public transport links or a local high street. Many tall buildings outside of major cities also have huge multi-story car parks just attached onto the side of them. Because the residents are tied into car dependency, they don't have any other choice, and this puts huge pressure on the local road network and adds to congestion. Instead, what we need to be focusing on is generally increasing the density across our cities, across our wider area. And toll buildings could possibly play a role in this, particularly where, you know, they may be marking a space, a place of special importance. But really, you can get the density you need with much lower rise development. So this idea that you have to build very tall to get sustainable densities, it's just not really the case. Now, I've been talking about density in a slightly abstract sense, so let's now think about what toll buildings can actually deliver. What do they actually deliver? Not just in terms of residential units or square meters of office space, but are they actually delivering what communities need? Many large cities across the world are currently facing housing shortages, resulting in high rents and long waiting lists for social housing. One of the arguments that is often used here in the UK in favour of toll buildings is the fact that they can deliver a huge number of new homes in one development relatively quickly. Planners love this because they just add this number of homes to a big spreadsheet somewhere and they can say they're making good progress towards their housing targets. But is this really the case? In world cities like London and New York, exquisite landmark toll buildings are often developed in prime locations, not to provide decent homes for normal people, but as luxury investment vehicles for wealthy internationals. A 2017 report from International Transparency UK analysed 14 luxury residential developments in London, comprising just over 2,000 homes, and found, quote, almost 80% of properties were bought by overseas investors. 40% of properties sold over the 14 developments were to individuals from high corruption risk jurisdictions or to companies based in secrecy havens. To understand the scale of this issue, consider this. The Guardian newspaper reported in 2016 that London had 54,000 flats priced at over £1 million, many of which in tall buildings. All this in the middle of a housing crisis where ordinary Londoners struggle to afford a mortgage far outside the city. Now, certainly this problem isn't just about tall buildings. I mean, investors buy homes of all shapes and sizes. But the fact that tall buildings have much bigger carbon footprints and a much bigger impact on the city in terms of skyline, overshadowing, overlooking, they can create a poor microclimate. Because of all this, you'd expect them to give something back to society beyond being full of expensive flats that are empty most of the time because their owners live elsewhere. In these situations, tall buildings become very difficult to justify from a sustainability point of view. Even when we're not talking about the super high end of the market, tall buildings are still more expensive to construct than conventional buildings for the same reasons that they are more carbon intensive. And this means that the end product, the apartments or office space, must sell at a premium. This means the viability of tall buildings is very narrow. There's a lot of upfront cost and you have to be sure you'll get your money back. That's why tall buildings tend to proliferate during economic boom and then they disappear during economic downturns. In fact, it was not uncommon after the 2008 financial crisis to see the skeletons of unfinished tall buildings towering over cities as the credit available for funding them disappeared during construction. So there's a real question of whether tall buildings are financially sustainable when they're so sensitive to market conditions. And in some locations with lower market values, they may never be viable. It's difficult to rely on them if they're a core part of our future vision for a place. However, when they are viable, tall buildings can play a key role in regeneration. On large urban regeneration sites, the kind that must be developed in phases over many years, often developers will plan a tall building or buildings in the very first phase. And they do this for two reasons. Firstly, the revenue from selling off units in the tall building can then be used as seed funding for the next phase of development, which may be of a lower scale. This makes financial sense, and it may make it more likely that the whole project will get built out successfully. Secondly, tall buildings are often used as signals of economic strength and vitality. They can help to attract investment because they convey confidence in the market and the project. This comes back to my short history of tall buildings at the beginning of the episode, we're culturally hardwired to perceive tall structures as having importance and prestige. So this can help to improve the image of the part of the city that's undergoing regeneration. Two great examples of this are the King's Cross regeneration in London and the Porta Nuova in Milan, both very large sites that lay vacant for a long time in parts of the cities that were perceived as being unattractive and a bit rough. Making use of some beautifully designed landmark tall buildings helped to dramatically change the character of the areas and signal that change was coming, and they're both now really successful new parts of the city. So I do think the tall buildings can play a role in the viability equation and also in creating an exciting new sense of place. Let's move on now and talk about the social dimension of tall buildings. In most situations, in most cities, tall buildings will not be sold to foreign millionaires. This is really, this is really happens in like London, New York, real world cities that have these super prime housing markets. In, more quote unquote normal places, let's say that, tall buildings may command a bit of a premium because of the prestige of living high up with a view, but they'll generally be bought and rented by ordinary people or businesses. So in this situation, can we justify tall buildings? Well, here is where we get into the social element of sustainability. For cities to be truly sustainable, they also have to be great places to live, where people can have a good quality of life. Sometimes people use the phrase livability to describe this concept. So, do tall buildings create good living environments? In part, this is a question of good design. We could point to exemplary tall buildings that demonstrate how we can provide an excellent quality of life in a high-rise form. But let's be honest, those examples are very much in the minority. So if we're asking the question of whether tall buildings create livable environments, our assessment shouldn't be skewed by either the expertly designed high-end luxury apartments or the disastrous post-war housing estates that are associated with crime and deprivation. Let's look at the average, ordinary tall buildings you would find anywhere. The ones that are nothing special, but also not particularly offensive. Luckily, there is quite a bit of research on the impact living in tall buildings can have on our physical and mental health, and also our communities. I'm pulling information here from two sources. One is a really interesting book on the psychology of city living called Headspace by Dr. Paul Keedwell. And the other is a research article from 2017 titled The Sustainability of Tall Building Development, a Conceptual Framework. Links for everything are in the description. I know probably nobody, even looks at the links, but I always put them in there anyway, so you know I'm not just making this stuff up as I go along. And maybe you're in university, you're working on a paper, and you want to find the source. It's there for you, my scholarly friends. So, interestingly, it seems that tall buildings can affect people differently depending on their personality. For instance, people who would be described as neurotic, meaning they are more prone to negative emotional states like depression and anxiety, unsurprisingly tend to experience more anxiety living in high-rise homes rather than in low-rise. This may be because there's a perceived greater risk of being a victim to disasters like fires or earthquakes. Living high up also can create a sensation of being trapped and disconnected from other people. In fact, this feeling of disconnectedness may well be borne out in reality, as residents of tall buildings tend to know fewer neighbours and have less community ties compared to residents of low-rise development, or even just the residents who live lower down in tall buildings. Research suggests that this is particularly challenging for extroverted people who crave social contact, whereas introverted people may be less bothered by the relative isolation. Quoting from the book Headspace, the author says, "We know that having a social network buffers against stress and negative moods, so it would not be surprising if the lack of relationships higher up were to cause us to feel less content. It is also an interesting insight that people who live on higher floors are less likely to exercise. Although they have access to a lift, it's as if the slightly greater time and effort required to get to street level is enough to tip the balance towards inaction. This then deprives them of yet another proven buffer against stress, anxiety, and depression, vigorous physical exertion. It's often argued as well that tall buildings are just not suitable for families, and the families don't want to live in them. And indeed, at least in the UK, most tall building developments are largely made up of one bed and studio apartments, being squarely aimed at young professionals and couples. And there may be good reason for this. Urban psychologists have suggested that living in tall buildings can be detrimental for children's development. The argument is that it's important for young children to experience ever-increasing amounts of freedom, to go outside the home, experience the real world, like the local neighbourhood, a park, the corner shop, and then return to the safety of home. This experience is only possible in low-rise urban forms, where parents can keep an eye on the street and be physically close to the outside. As the author says, this interplay between dependence and autonomy that earns a child a sense of competence is missing in high-rise environments. High-rise developments also tend to lack adequate open space and access to nature, elements very important for both childhood development and the physical and mental well-being of adults. A research report by London School of Economics, titled Residents' Experience of High-Rise Housing in London, found that one of the key elements that made a successful high-density development was the inclusion of an integrated high-quality green space for residents. When these are well-designed, they tend to be used a lot by residents and really increase their happiness of living, their sense of well-being of living there. However, when they're just hard-surfaced, windswept spaces that are heavily overlooked, they tend to be underused and deserted. Interestingly, the report also mentions that roof gardens are generally not used very much by residents, partly because many residents don't know they're allowed to use it. They don't feel like a public space, and partly because of restrictions of use. After all, you can't have a barbecue, kick a football around, or cycle a bike on a roof terrace, so that really limits their usefulness for a lot of people. Okay, so it's looking like there's a lot of challenges for creating good living environments for residents of tall buildings. Of course, some of these issues can be mitigated by design, and that's an important lesson to take from this. The other thing is that, you know, maybe some people with particular personality types just aren't suited to tall buildings, but other people might love them. How about the effect of tall buildings on the wider city? I could speak at length about the urban design implications of tall buildings, how they affect our perception of cities, affect microclimate, and the common issues around dead frontages and lack of public life around tall buildings. But to avoid straying too far from the topic at hand, which is sustainability, I will leave you with one final thought. Many of you listening may be familiar with the urban heat island effect, which is the phenomenon where urban areas heat up more, tend to be hotter, than the surrounding countryside on any given day. Now, this can lead to really deadly heat waves, as well as just much more energy needed and used through air conditioning during the summer. Well, the height of buildings also has an effect on the urban heat island. The increased heat isn't just felt at ground level. Heat rises after all. And the height of the heat island effect is generally about 3 to 5 times the average building height. So high-rise cities have a more extreme version of the heat island effect, and therefore have more trouble cooling down during heat waves. This has knock-on effects on our mental and physical health, as well as emissions due to increased air conditioning. If you want to learn more about this topic, I covered it in detail actually in episode 4 of this podcast, so you can go back and check that out, all about extreme heat caused by climate change and how our cities can deal with it. Okay, that is basically everything I wanted to cover. I know there's a lot of negativity in this episode, and you might be thinking that I just hate tall buildings and I don't want any more of them anywhere. I think it's important to be honest about these things. You know, if we're going to move our thinking beyond simply density is good, we need more density, we need to be honest about the impact that certain building typologies have on our cities. The shape of the built environment is really important. It's not just about density numbers and housing numbers. Despite all this, I'm actually not anti-tall building. I think they do have a role to play in cities just as they always have, but they need to be exceptional, and they need to be fulfilling a purpose that necessitates height rather than being tall for the sake of it. We shouldn't allow tall buildings to become the norm, and we shouldn't be wasting materials and energy just to build them when we don't need them or when they're not serving us. Now, there is one final question I have, which is, you know, what are the role of tall buildings in the post-COVID world? People are realizing that they can work remotely. They don't need to be crammed into small flats near city centers. Surveys over the lockdown have told us that people are now placing a much higher value on having their own open space and being close to parks and nature because they're spending so much more time at home. Businesses are also realizing that they don't need to pay expensive rents in landmark office towers if half their staff are working from home at any time. Or some businesses have actually gone 100% work from home, smart working, so they don't need an office space at all. It will be really interesting to see how tall buildings fit into this new paradigm going forward. I guess only time will tell. I have a quick favor to ask before you leave. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate the podcast and leave a review. This really helps the podcast to move up the rankings and get more visibility on the platform, get more people listening. That would be great. Wherever you're listening, please subscribe or follow or whatever the version is in the app that you're using. And I've also just set up a LinkedIn profile. So just search for Green Urbanist Podcast on LinkedIn and you can follow all the news there. I'm posting sort of slightly longer form stuff there because it doesn't have the word limit like Twitter does. I mean, I'm the guy who records 40-minute long podcasts on one topic. I can't really fit much into 140 characters, so I think LinkedIn is a bit better for me. But you can also follow the podcast on Twitter and on Instagram. That's it. Thank you so much. Please share the podcast if you've enjoyed it. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time.